The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 22nd of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Harvey Sinclair, CEO of E-Energy, explains why they've made a further investment in the recently formed specialist smart metering measurement equipment and analytics business. Also, Glenn Goodman, former ITV news business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrency news. We argue a lot about stuff. You know, we always do. Also, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. You can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of the content. There's one there on an article on then Inspiration Health Group. There's one there on Novacyte. There's a new video with Paul Hill and Lawrence from Gresham House. There's an article on Novacyte. That's from Fran Morgan. There's one in Scansel as well from Fran. Also, COVID-19 index. Check that out. Bit of a sell-off at the moment today in the markets, I think, in small caps. Biggest riser is E-Therapeutics, up 8.7% to 24.8. Biggest faller is Gene Drive, down 10% to 47.75. And lots of red on the screen today. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Xumo. Xumo is the UK-based digital wallet which makes your money and cryptocurrency work seamlessly together. Xumo is a simple and safe way to start your crypto journey. Download the app today on iOS or Android and get going in as little as 5 minutes.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harvey Sinclair, CEO at E-Energy. That's E-A-A-S. Harvey, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've announced today further investment into smart metering business, and we'll dig into that and ask you why. It's probably a good reason why, but we'll ask you exactly why you're doing that. Before we do, as always, Harvey, for people maybe have never heard of you before, could you explain what E-Energy is all about, please?
Sure, yes. So E-Energy is an energy-as-a-service business, providing our B2B customers with the ability to reduce their energy consumption through an as-a-service capital-free solution. So what that really means is we provide a turnkey solution, fully funded across multiple technologies, leading with lighting, that allows our customers to then pay for effectively the solution through the savings that's being generated from the technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're in the right space at the right time, I suppose. And so this now, further investment in smart metering. Can you explain, first of all, when you first started investing in this and why you're increasing that, please?
Yeah, so a lot of people hear the word sort of smart meters banded around in the media, but actually, you know, most smart meters are pretty dumb. What really matters to organization is where are they consuming their energy effectively behind the meter, as opposed to, you know, what data is the smart meter telling them the building is consuming? So we've been looking at how do we start providing our customers with visibility on where they're consuming their energy, and more importantly, where are they wasting their energy? So we've invested into a business that's been established for over 9 years, a business called Measure My Energy, a fantastic company, very tech-focused, proprietary UK technology business, sort of firmware and software, that does exactly that. It's a behind-the-meter, intelligent, smart metering platform that provides customers with the ability to have granular visibility on precisely where in their organization, in their buildings, right down to individual assets, they're consuming energy, and therefore where they're wasting energy. Because the fact is, 42% of the world's energy is wasted. Until you fix that energy leaky bucket, investing in renewables and on-site generation is not the priority. It should be fixing the energy efficiency. So we think this is fundamental to our strategy.
Yeah. And to energy itself, isn't it? I mean, it's coming under increasing focus, isn't it? Because we understand, you know, it's we have to be very smart about it in a certain way. So it's you're tapping into a bigger trend here, aren't you, really?
Well, the thing is, you know, when we look at what does E-Energy do, E-Energy manages our customers' energy procurement through our zero carbon platform that we acquired in December, which is Beyond. And that allows customers to move from buying brown energy, whether it's gas or power, to green energy for the lowest possible price in the most flexible solution possible. And on the right-hand side of our business, we have our energy as a service business, which is all about energy reduction. So, you know, it is a brilliant synergy to be able to offer energy measurement and consumption analytics as part of our procurement solutions, mm-hmm. so that we can see and get visibility on where our customers have the opportunities to reduce their consumption. So we're going to be layering in our measurement and verification and measurement and monitoring platform through a subscription model. So mm-hmm. a very low cost monthly subscription model that our energy procurement customers will access that gives them the visibility, big differentiator in the market over and above the other energy brokers. But then it gives us access to this vast data lake for our customers around, you know, where their consumption has the opportunity to be reduced. Mm-hmm. And therein lies a perfect inroad for our energy as a service to enable that energy reduction through a subscription model as well. So again, coming back to eEnergy's core thesis is going green should be profitable, providing capital-free solutions to get our customers to net zero over a painless journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your RNS as well today, you've provided a group outlook. It seems quite bullish, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, look, we've had obviously, like everybody, a challenging year, but because our core business is growing so strongly, we're very pleased to announce that we're on track. The full results will be obviously due shortly, but giving guidance that we're on track and business is growing, continues to grow, both in the education sector and also in other more interesting sectors such as healthcare, which is starting to be a big push for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, three reasons then. Harvey, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the space you're occupying, the growth you're getting there, you're achieving, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add eEnergy to their watch list, please.
Sure. I guess, look, number one, businesses and organisations are now obliged to be looking at their energy consumption, looking at reducing their carbon footprint. eEnergy provides an end-to-end solution. Secondly, businesses are capital constrained and therefore find it difficult to justify prioritizing energy efficiency. We take that pain away and allow customers to do it through a subscription model. And then thirdly, it's about being an end-to-end partner, being able to take them on the journey from procurement all the way through to energy reduction through one trusted partner.
Excellent stuff. Harvey, good to chat to you. And hopefully we catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Glenn Goodman. He is the author of The Crypto Trader. It's a book that's used as a coffee coaster. It's an expensive coffee coaster, the most expensive I've ever had in my life. But it's very handy. And
if only you'd actually read the whole book, then that coaster would have paid for itself 1,000 times over.
I don't read the book. I'm not a dirty trader. Well, it's only for dirty traders, isn't it? I mean, I'm an investor. And in fact, Glenn,
It's for investors and traders.
Yeah, okay, we'll open the market up. It's for investors as well with a trading edge. I was 2 minutes late to this call because I was researching, and I have been all morning researching crypto.
Oh.
And you laughed. You said, yeah, because now's a good time to buy. I said, no, now's a good time to research. I was just because I hold three cryptos, not a lot, tiny bit in, and unless I have a bit of money in, I won't pay attention to it. So that's what I've done. I'm underwater, of course, on three of them, which I hold, which is Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Cardano. And I've been looking up Cardano a lot and researching a bit more and more and more. And the more I research, the more I like it. There's guys there comparing it to Ethereum and to Polkadot and all that. And it seems like Cardano is going to be the one. It's the only sort of peer-reviewed thing. And I look at energy.
Energy
consumption as well. Amazing. Very little. I think going forward, we have to understand there's no bigger driver at the moment. This is part of the reason why, of course, what's his name? Elon Musk. It's said they weren't taking Bitcoin anymore because the consumption of energy consumption. And, okay, so that didn't help sentiment, but it does consume a lot of energy. And that going forward is very important, I think, because let's be honest, the biggest problems we've got before the pandemic came along was climate change. And everyone was going on about it. It was in our faces nonstop. And all of a sudden, we've temporarily forgotten about it. But it's such a huge thing. It's still there. And people said, and I agree, it's, well, I don't know about the science of this, but it's more dangerous to our, to the existence of the human race than a pandemic of a virus. You know, we'll get over that. We can build a virus now in 10 months, a vaccine, I mean. So climate change is still there. So if cryptos are going to be big, they have to be efficient. They can't be sapping all the energy out of, you know, all these renewables are creating, which Bitcoin is doing pretty much. It's basically, of all this, you know, clean energy being produced, Bitcoin is killing it, pretty much. So I don't see this as a short trend sell-off. I don't see it as a bounce or just drop and it'll bounce back up. I think this will be, like we've said before, everything's rolling over. When this happened before, when the death crosses happened before, we're talking about months here. We're not talking about a week or something. So I think it's plenty of time now. And I'm saying the best time to research is right now. You know, while it's dropping off a cliff, and by the time you've done some research, you can start taking small positions in, I believe, some investor, not like you, Diddy Trader, in long-term sustainable tech. And I believe Cardano could be that, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree, which is, I mean, the thing about Cardano is that it's still a speculative bet, right? Yeah. It's kind of like a better version of Ethereum in some ways.
Yeah.
And Ethereum in itself is planning to kind of solve the climate problem when it brings in its proof of stake, Ethereum 2.0, which keeps being delayed and delayed, but hopefully will be only a matter of months away. When it comes in, you know, it really won't be a problem, the environmental aspect, anymore. It will be very, very minor. So that would solve that problem. The thing is, I love Cardano as well. And the guy who invented it, who
Charles
actually
Hoskinson.
Was... Yeah, who was originally an Ethereum developer and decided he could do a kind of better version. Mm. I mean, he's absolutely brilliant if you ever hear him speak.
Yeah,
he does lots of sort of YouTube Q&As.
Yeah, he
and
does a lot
of
that. He's worth listening
he's
to.
He's really good, yeah. He's brilliant on everything, not just on Cardano. He's interesting to listen to generally. But... you know, so that gives me a lot of faith, and clearly it's given you a lot of faith as well, the fact that the guy behind it actually knows what he's doing. The guy behind Ethereum is a genius as well.
Well, I didn't know this. Do you know Polkadot? Three of them, they all started off, the one Polkadot is also an answer to Ethereum's problems, apparently, because all three of them started off. Gavin Wood is behind Polkadot. But they all started with, I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name at Ethereum. What's his name? The guy now
Vitalik
Buterin. Vitalik, yeah. So Charles and Gavin and Vitalik were all starting Ethereum, but the two broke off because they didn't like the way Ethereum was going. And whereas Polkadot has sort of gone for it, and Charles hasn't. He's gone more the peer-reviewed adoption. So he's got all these experts or people, you know, high up in computing around the world. And before they start submitting stuff or code, they start, you know, peer reviewing it first, which I quite like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I like that as well. He actually takes on other people's views on board and thinks about things and changes things. I don't know. It's kind of, even though he's basically the guy in charge, he tries to kind of make it a decentralized feel.
Yeah,
to the whole
fact.
Thing
it's
by you know, getting some consensus. And
right now, he wants to make it, it's more decentralized than Polkadot, and he wants to make it the most decentralized cryptocurrency. He wants to solve the energy issue as well, and he's trying to do that, and the speed of transactions, all that kind of stuff.
Interoperability, yeah.
Yeah, where it can operate interchange.
But there is one big problem with Cardano, which is that... nobody's using it. Right?
No, not Whereas yet, but Ethereum, they're not meant to,
are
they?
Yeah, no, but Ethereum has already got that first mover advantage. It's already the basis of most of the DeFi industry, the decentralized finance industry, which accounts for, I mean, already there are tens of billions of dollars tied up in decentralized finance. So it's already a kind of significant player in the finance industry, even though it's just kind of grown up on its own, on the side, without really any input from the traditional finance industry. Also, NFTs tend to be based on Ethereum rather than Cardano. And more importantly, there are hardly any developers working on Cardano-related projects, whereas, you know, nearly all the developers are working on Ethereum-related projects. Yeah, sure, maybe they will eventually all cross over into Cardano, or a significant proportion of them will. But the problem is, at the moment, that isn't happening to any great extent. So Cardano is, you know, it's a punt.
Basically. Yeah. No, listen, I absolutely is a punt. It's several billion dollars. It's a big punt. I think we can't compare Ethereum and Cardano, really, as in as much to say that Cardano is trying to sort of the problems that Ethereum has. So essentially, it's like comparing a racing car that's racing on a track, which is Ethereum already, but having problems. They're trying to change the thing while it's racing. They're trying to change parts of the car or adapt the car while it's racing. And whereas Cardano right now, they are building the car of the future, saying, we're not going to start racing until we've got a good car. And so that's the way I see it. But it's more comparable to Polkadot, but Polkadot's a bit further along as well. But again, I quite like Cardano. It's more like they're trying to build it from the perfect, you know, future-proof model, rather than just get going straight away and then sort of adapt it along the way, which is what's happening with Ethereum, I suppose. But do you know what? Who knows? But I'm just saying, right now is a good time to research these cryptos while they're having a sell-off, because I think you can take a bit of time researching them. If you believe the tech has potential, of course it does. Decentralized. I mean, even looking at Bitcoin itself, it's not been hacked since it's been around. So that just shows you how powerful it is. Okay, with the emergence of some of these new powerful quantum computers, you may say that. That's down the road a bit, and only the big guys are going to be operating those for a while. So what worries me about quantum computing, though, is that China wants to be a big player in that field. And I think, oh no, they'll hack everything. Well, they hack absolutely everything, the Chinese. So who knows?
Well, the Chinese, there's been big news about the Chinese this week in the cryptocurrency world. Yeah. They've been running around China, as the Chinese government like to do. They run around China. They don't use vehicles, they just run. And they've basically been turning off the machines, the mining machines for Bitcoin. So, you know, a lot of Bitcoin's mining capacity is just disappearing now because most of it was in China. And they're going around finding all the mining rigs and turning them all off and saying, you know, it's using up electricity, blah, blah, blah. And we just don't like crypto, because the government doesn't like crypto, of course, because it's decentralized and they want to promote their own centralized central bank digital currency.
I saw a picture of that on Twitter, where it's one of these massive sort of outside sort of Bitcoin farms, literally racks and racks and racks. You're talking like, to put it in comparison scale-wise, you're talking like almost, I mentioned seeing a football stadium and one of the terraces there, that was full of Bitcoin machines, two sides of it, and they're all been stripped out. And so what happens to that? What's called this? What the hash rate? Don't they? Do you know anything about that? Or how that works?
Yeah. I mean, I understand how that works. I mean, really, what will probably happen is that the mining machines will simply be replaced by other ones around the world. The way mining works, it's kind of like a competition. Well, it is a competition. It's literally a competition for whose machines can solve the mathematical problem quickest, and then they get the new Bitcoin that is created every 10 minutes. You know, there's a new Bitcoin block created, and so these machines are all in competition with each other for the new Bitcoin.
And that's the problem with energy, isn't it?
And if you've got fewer competitors, because all the Chinese ones are being switched off, then that makes it easier for everybody else. But obviously it attracts new entrants into the industry, because if it's easier for everyone else, then new entrants in Western countries suddenly find that it might be profitable, whereas it wasn't profitable before, to enter the industry, you know, like any free market, really.
Yeah. And that's where also, that competition, that's where all the energy consumption happens, because everyone's competing. All the machines are mining like hell. Now, that's what we call it's proof of work, isn't it? Now, proof of stake is different, and that's what's based on Cardano, where by holding it, you get rewards. And there are not so many miners. You have people that are slotted in. It's only a certain amount of miners allowed at certain times, and so that brings the energy consumption down. But so what you were saying also, I saw on Twitter somewhere, is there some big shorts on Bitcoin at the moment?
Yeah, actually, let me check that this morning, because that was me talking about yesterday.
20,000, anyway, that's where I see Bitcoin going. 20,000, that's where I see it going, because it just looks really symmetrical, the chart. And I think it's too nice not to complete that symmetry of going up, where it paused at 20,000, went up then at 65,000. And I was coming down, it'll break this 30,000, it'll go down to 20,000, I reckon.
But because everybody's expecting it.
Yeah, yeah, maybe like, it was as far as that.
Yeah, because the market often likes to do what nobody expects. And this Head and Shoulders that we're seeing on the top of the Bitcoin chart is so blatant.
Yeah, but you know what, though?
Everybody and their granny is writing to me going, I can see this big Head and Shoulders. And it's like, well, if beginners can all see it, it just feels a bit too obvious to come to fruition somehow.
Then,
and yet,
yes, but then people say, because everyone can see it, it won't happen. And then people start thinking it won't happen. And it does happen.
Oh, God, you're right. You're right. Well, it's second-guessing and second-guessing the second-guessers. That's what we've got to do. Actually, here's a target for you, if you want one. You're saying 20,000.
15.
Did you say 15? Yeah. I thought you said 20.
Yeah, no, I just saw someone on Investopedia say, no, investing.com saying 15, then back to 80. So I don't know what's going on. People are throwing numbers around, aren't they, really? But 20 looks nice to me.
Well, I'm thinking that a natural bottom, a point at which everybody sort of panics and goes, oh, my God, Bitcoin's finished, would be if Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy, you know, the company that bought billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin, and he's constantly in the crypto news doing interviews saying how amazing Bitcoin is and it's going to take over the world. What would mark a brilliant bottom would be when he breaks even. Right, when he's no longer in profit, because, you know, there were numerous stories saying Michael Saylor's company has already made this many billions on Bitcoin. And, you know, it turned out to be the best decision ever. Well, apparently, because he's just bought a ton more Bitcoin at $37,000, which turns out not to perhaps been the best move in the world, because it's now fallen considerably further than that. Apparently, he will now break even, or his company will break even at 26,000 and something. Okay. So I'm thinking if the price reaches that level, you'll suddenly get a rash of news stories, won't you? Suddenly, Michael Saylor's profits wiped out. Catastrophe for MicroStrategy or whatever. You know, that would be a kind of bad news headline that could possibly mark the bottom. Not necessarily the bottom, but at least a kind of temporary bottom.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what I discovered? With any investment, when people are overexposed, they get more bullish, more headlong, more almost deluded, you know, the more money they're having something, the more overexposed they are. And you can see this on Twitter with any company, any small company that people have. They want all their money in one company. They will constantly tweet about it. And that's the same with Pompliano and Michael Saylor. They constantly go on about it. And in their minds, there's no question that they're wrong. Which, of course not, because you've got so much tied up in it. You can't afford for it to be wrong. So you're basically going on about it. If they held on,
he talks about the crypto hornets.
Yeah.
Michael Saylor does. He calls everybody who owns Bitcoin a swarm of crypto hornets holding up the financial universe, or say. And he's only half joking. He's actually quite serious about the crypto hornets. I've heard him philosophizing about them in talks.
But I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, how it goes, because he's an intelligent guy and he's made lots of money, of course. But he's still literally, you know, doubling up, isn't he? Doubling down, I should say, on his bet there. And, of course, he's not going to admit to being wrong all of a sudden, because he can't. He can't afford to.
Of course. I mean, look, he built up a big company, right? He had some very serious problems during the dot-com crash, but got through those. But the past 20 years, MicroStrategy has been pretty much treading water. You know, look at its share price over the past 20 years. Look at its profits and its revenues. He was in a bit of a bind, really. His company wasn't going anywhere fast, even though the rest of the tech industry was. Yeah. And that was kind of embarrassing, apart from anything else, I imagine. And so then he gets this Bitcoin idea and decides to do what no sensible company in the history of the world has ever done, which is put loads of its reserves, its cash reserves, into an extremely volatile asset.
Yeah.
Like, nobody does that. Companies invest their cash reserves in like safe treasury bonds and that kind of thing. The idea is to preserve your cash assets.
Well, do you know what? That's a good point.
Bet them all on a casino.
Yep.
But that's basically what he did.
Yeah.
And you know, oh, I don't, sorry, go on. What were you
saying? No, that was a very good point there about preserving. I've just read this book. I'm still in the middle of it. It's an audio book about 100 baggers. And they look at people who've made lots of money. Okay. And they were saying sometimes the qualities entrepreneur or good investor that makes lots of money possess isn't the same qualities you need for conserving that money, preserving it, because you take risks, you know, to put big investments on. Some of these people really knock it out of the ballpark. chance their arm, you know, and they take, they're big risk takers. Now, when it comes to preserving that, they kind of switch off that risk-taking side of them, you know. So a lot of these people who made massive gains before, for example, they go back to pre-Depression days, 1930s, who made loads of money there, end up being skint. And in fact, some of them committed suicide during the Depression because they lost everything. Now, some of the people who, you know, who managed to make money there and then conserve it almost weren't as big bet takers, you know. In fact, the talk about Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett, that there was a third guy in that party, but he was a big risk taker, and he went through, basically. And so Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett didn't, because they knew they were going to be rich, but they didn't want to be rich, like, overnight. They wanted to take a long time. And obviously that's proved them well. But the other guy you never heard of, he went bust. And Buffett bought the shares off him. He was the third partner, pretty much, in Berkshire Hathaway. Bought his shares off him at $40. And now they're over $400,000 a share. So,
well, indeed. I mean, look, every single...
So Michael Saylor could go through. He's got that tendency, he's kind of going for legendary status,
isn't he? Or bust. Yeah. That's effectively what that strategy is. It's like, either I'm going to be a legend that everybody worships for centuries to come as the prophet of Bitcoin, or I've ruined everything. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, that's the bet he's taking. And, you know, fair enough on him. I'm not sure it's that fair on the shareholders, but, you know, there you go. But it's interesting what you say, because this happens in every single boom. You know, you and I are long in the tooth enough to remember all the names that have come through in every minor stock market boom we've seen in the last 20, 25 years. And you know what? You know, I said I had a package. I had to go and get a package from the door.
Yeah,
the doorbell's ringing. I'll see you in a second.
We knew that would happen.
Keep talking to the listeners.
Yeah, just hurry up. Okay. Glenn hasn't got a clue what he's talking about. He's an absolute imbecile, honestly. While he's away... he's a dirty trader. He sits there in his boxers. Right? Hasn't washed for days. You know, hasn't shaven. Hair ruffled all over the place. And he comes on here sounding very, very clear-cut and, you know, and like his thoughts have been pre-prepared, well thought out, rehearsed. No, literally, he's just got out of bed. He's in a pair of boxers that are basically sticking to him. But he's probably going to get the door now. He's probably have to put his... It's taking time because he's having to put his dressing gown on, of course. And oh, Glenn.
Okay, I'm back. I got the package.
I had nothing but good things to say about you there.
It's for my wife's birthday.
Is it? What is it?
Yeah. I can't say, because she's actually just walked in the house literally just after the package arrives. Isn't that sod's law?
Good timing.
She could have got the package if she was just like 1 minute earlier.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't have had to interrupt this podcast and ruin it. We've now ruined it.
So listen, this is the mistake I made last time was this, right? I did like 3 or 4 videos on Bitcoin and all that stuff at around $9,000 it was. I gave up Ghost. I lost patience. I've done it so many times, but now I've done it so many times, I realise that's my problem. The stocks as well. I've sold stocks way too early, been too early in the trend of stocks, and then not been around, not hung around long enough for the big, really big sort of trend to happen. So I think this is all I've got to do now is have patience, research some of these cryptos while the downturn is happening. And then start taking small... I mean, my stake in crypto at the moment, I just worked it out there, when you're chatting there, is less than a tenth of 1% in crypto. So that's all I'm risking at the moment. But I will be scaling up a little bit, you know, as time goes on. But I'll also look at charts a bit, because you have to trade a little bit in crypto, as you know that, because the fundamentals are very questionable at the moment, because, like I said, they're not making money most of the things. They're losing money or whatever and just generating... I just think it's an opportunity right now to learn a bit more about crypto, you know?
Exactly. Read my book, people. Now is the time. Because people always read my book when it's too late. They always read it when, the most sales I had were right at the top of this recent boom.
That's how herd mentality works. People don't understand that.
Like, read it a year earlier would have been a good idea.
Yeah, but herd mentality works. They don't understand. Most people will not make good money in the market. Can't do it. That's not the way it works, you know. Most people start buying after the herd. You have to be buying. We'll see this capitulation in Bitcoin. It'll happen. People become bored with it, won't talk about it for a while. That is a time when you need to start accumulating whatever crypto you think is good, because they'll all pretty much rise, let's be honest, all the bigger ones. But now is the time that these cryptos need to come down in value a little bit to the point where, you know, they're almost, people just forget about them, stop ramping them so much. I look at my Twitter these days, and I don't follow as much crypto as you, but it's all over the place, you know? And I think it's got to quieten down a bit, you know?
I agree. And it is. It's, you know, now we're getting the bad news. And after the bad news comes the despondency. So hopefully we'll have at least a short period of despondency for everyone to get bored. And then it can recover again. And whether it recovers from a point close to where it is now or from much lower down, who knows? But the beauty of being a dirty trader, you see, is that you get out before this happens. You know, I sold my Bitcoin significantly higher than this. Where was it? Near the top 50,000 something or other. I sold at. So, you know, so I'm quite relaxed now. And that's the way that anybody who read my book should be at this point. Just now waiting, just sitting on your cash and waiting for the good times to start returning. And when they start returning, we see the signs in the charts. We also see the sentiment. We see the good news starting to come out in the media. And, you know, you see all the signs, all the stars align. And then those are that's the time that I prefer to start buying. But anyway, I just wanted to make that quick point before I went away to get the package. I was going to say, you and me have seen enough of these little booms in the stock market over time to see the stars that grow. You know how people become momentarily famous for being amazing at trading, you know? And I mean, I guess the best example recently would be, I've forgotten his name. You know, the big fund manager who messed stuff up recently. About a year ago.
Yeah, the fun guy blew his fund up. Yeah, exactly.
Why have I forgotten his name?
No, I know what you
very
mean.
Famous guy.
No, well, do you know what?
God, this is so annoying.
That's a very good example of
somebody. Everybody listening is shouting the name right now.
Not many people know him that much. He's not that well known.
He's well known. Oh. Yeah, he's well known. Hold on, investment. What was it? Help me.
But anyway, listen, that was a very good example of someone trying to be rich, very rich, very good. Now, he's well off anyway, very well off. He's probably had, like, you know, 8 to 9 figures in millions, but he wanted to be a billionaire, let's be honest, and he wanted to do it very quickly, and he leveraged up massively, and it went against him. That's what could happen to Michael Saylor, really, you know. I mean, I don't understand why he's buying right now. If anyone can half read a chart, they say, don't buy now, because it's quite questionable as to where it's going, you know. Wait until you get the moving average to turn around or settle down a bit. At least then buy into a trend, not a downtrend, you know? I don't understand why he did that. So it's just silly.
The thing is, you always get the huge risk takers during the good times, and they always get all the attention, and then they nearly always blow up. Whereas, as you say, the Warren Buffetts of this world, the people who are happy to take 20, I mean, he does amazingly well, gets 20 to 30% on average per year, which is still, you know, pretty racy by investment standards, very racy, but it's not like the crazy hundreds and hundreds of percent per year that crypto traders often expect to earn on an ongoing basis. And I did this thing in my book where I showed you what would happen if you were earning like hundreds of percent per year, as many of these crypto traders with their Lamborghinis pretend that they get. You know, you could do it on a one-off basis, but if you were doing that every year, within a very small number of years, you'd be one of the richest people in the world. So how come the top rich lists aren't full of successful traders? That's the question.
I say that all the time.
Why aren't these Lambo guys up there in the billionaire lists? But then they never are they?
There's no traders in the top 1,000. They're investors and business owners, which are investors.
George Soros.
I keep saying that. He owns businesses. Let's be honest. He owns a business. Business owners and investors in businesses are in the rich list. Traders scalping profit here and there are not.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
We'll have an experiment, me and you, right?
Yeah.
We'll wait until we both agreed on this podcast that we are now at or close to a bottom, right? You trade and we'll put the same amount in maybe. I don't know what you want to put in. Put the same amount in and we'll see if me sitting there doing nothing or you trading it out, who makes more money?
Oh,
we should pick the same.
Yeah, but you see now,
we should pick the same.
You're encouraging me to go for that legend or broke mentality.
No, do it as you do it in the book, as you would do it in the
competitions and things. That's why I don't do investing competitions, because that's precisely what you're setting up, an artificial benchmark.
No, hang on, Greg.
Beat it, Greg.
I'm looking at someone called Greg there. Hang on, right? Listen, what I'm saying is, Glenn, right, that I will sit and hold as an investor, you will trade. That's what you do. I invest, you trade. We'll put the same amount in the same coin, and we'll see who does the best. Over a year.
Over a year means nothing anyway. It would have to be over
20
years.
10 years.
We're doing over 20 years. Oh, we'll have a 20
We will never let it end. Over 60 years before we die, and I'll do in deathbed say, I beat you, Glenn. You'll probably die before
I'll
me.
Say no, the stress, we're not dead yet.
The stress of trading
will
probably kill you.
We'll only know 100 years after we're both dead who was really the winner.
The stress of trading will probably kill you before me, let's be honest, even though you're younger than me. But
Stress. We made that point, didn't we? Okay, so it's the slow and steady, it's the tortoise that wins rather than the hare. Though, as I say, you know, you don't, being a tortoise doesn't mean you have to earn low returns, particularly if you're in trading crypto. I mean, you know, I bought in at what, 10,000 thereabouts, and sold out at 50 something thousand. You know, that was a tortoise trade by the standards of crypto traders, and yet, you know, it was still five times the original investment. That's like a 400%, 100, 200, 300. Yeah, is that 400? Hold on, 100, 200, 300. That's 500% profit, isn't it? Hold on, am I thinking straight?
I'm typing something. Go on.
It's a 400% profit. All right. Anyway, point is, what was my point? My point was simply that you could still make absolutely tons of money trading cryptocurrencies, or indeed stocks, or indeed commodities, or indeed anything, but you don't have to go for the crazy risks. You don't have to try and be one of those Lambo people who are like, I'm going to be the richest person in my locality by the end of this year or whatever. It's like, chill out. You've got your entire life. Young people in particular are often susceptible to this way of thinking. They want it now. And it's like, you know, just calm down, do it properly, and you can still make tons of money, and you can still eventually give up your job. But don't expect to give up your job. You know, I took years and years before I gave up my job after I started trading. I started trading, learnt the craft, waited like more than a decade, and then gave up my job. I didn't want to like just dive in. Like some people write to me letters and emails and say, I want to give up my job immediately. I've been trading for 3 months now. And it's like, please, that's not a good idea.
Hang on a sec. There's no one writing new letters, surely.
I've had a couple of letters. Yeah, you're
to
right.
Where does the letters come to?
So I don't know. They get a couple of people got my address. I guess it must be somewhere if you search the electoral roll or something. I don't know. I don't want to give people hints as to how to get my address, but I assume they must have got it that way. It was only a couple of people have written to me, but yeah, it's mainly emails. Lots of emails and messages on Twitter.
Let's be honest. Have you had
Facebook.
Any letters?
I've had two letters. All right, two.
Were they from the tax man or something? Who were they from?
They're from people who read my book. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
If I were you,
I'd have those
people.
Well,
you can't even believe I've had two letters.
No, in this day and age, no. If I was you, I would literally put restraining orders on those two people.
Really?
Why have they got your address? Why are they sending you letters in this day and age? To me, they're mentally unstable. They should not be looking up your address and sending you a letter.
I better check. I thought I'd put myself at, you know, one of those things where you can't discover someone.
I know what it is, Glenn. They're locked up, and they're in prison, probably.
Of course, and I write back to them, and the plan is that when they get out of prison, we're going to get married, see? Or actually, we could have one of those prison weddings.
Okay, that's what it is. So either way, be careful. There's people writing you letters. That's worrying. Right, market's selling off. You've got to listen. Doesn't bother me, really. I'm in good companies. My portfolio value, trading value has gone down, but it doesn't bother me at all. I mean,
you talk about the stock market.
Yeah, it's a bit of sell-off of late.
But it recovered really well yesterday, which cheered me up quite a lot.
But now it's looking a bit red again. But not to worry. If your horizon is like, at least 12 months, don't worry. If your horizon is like, 12 minutes, then, you know. Well, it's a different thing, isn't it? But there we are.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I sold off a few things during the sell-off, but I've kept the vast majority of my stocks and shares.
Yeah, that's because you're a daily trader.
Well, I only sold off the ones that I'd bought recently and that had immediately, you know, gone into a loss because of this drawdown. And, you know, I don't tolerate losses. So I quickly sold anything that had broken out and then had a failed breakout. But that wasn't many things. I held on to everything that I've had for a while.
But, hang on, but if the businesses are improving, don't worry about the share price too much. Don't worry about it.
I don't tolerate losses.
You can't. You know? Well, no. As a businesses will tolerate losses. It's fine. What's the problem with that?
No, because the point is that let's say,
let's say this isn't a little correction.
Let's say this is something far more serious.
Oh,
right?
You can't keep peeing your pants every time you deliver a sell-off.
No, I'm just saying, if I've got shares that are already making a loss, then it makes sense to always cut your losses quickly.
No,
because
that's
that way
trader,
you never have big
absolute,
losses.
Absolute rubbish, that is. If you buy quality companies, you don't need to keep cutting your losses. I've been through three now big market sell-offs. I've got more at the end than at the start. And that's it.
I know, but what about when the big one comes?
What are you going to do then?
What's going to be worse?
What's going to be worse than this? First of all, we had a massive bubble that popped, right, in the recession of the crypto. Then we had the banks fail. It didn't get bigger than that, the banks fail. Then we had a global pandemic. What's going to be worse than that?
None of those drawdowns were anything like the one that we saw in 2008, right?
That's the banks failing, great financial crash, yeah.
Yeah.
So well, you've yeah, gone. That, I've gone through three of those, and I've gone.
I've just sat through the entire thing without selling.
I've done 100 times my portfolio value in the last 12, 15 years. So I'm fine. What's going to happen next? We're aliens come and shoot us all. Is that what's going to happen? I mean, why are people worried about the next big thing? It's even worse. That's the nature, right, of human worriers.
Yeah, but why would you sit through that long drawdown in 2008? Why not just do what I did, which is sell my shares and then start buying them all again in March 2009?
Because if you read any of the books,
you're selling high and then buying low.
Time in the market's always beaten timing the market every single time.
Say that again.
Time in the market has beaten trying to time the market every single time. Because some of the biggest sell-off days are next to the biggest gain days. And you can't time that.
You don't want to be in and out of the market the whole time. I am not that kind of trader, right? But when there is a once-in-a-decade bear market, I don't want to sit through that bear market. That's for me, that is the market timing that I do. Is just once every 10 years or so, I will sell all my shares as the crash begins and then buy a load of shares as the crash is ending and then avoid a 50, 60% drawdown. But I don't buy and sell on every little dip along the way. Absolutely not. Just the big ones.
But you don't know what the big ones are.
I actually tweeted out, you're right, it doesn't always feel obvious, but 2008 it felt obvious to me because it was such a, you know, it was terrible.
Anyway, we're going to do that experiment. We're going to do it, right, for once and for all. Prove investing beats trading hands down.
Do it with someone else.
I'm doing it with you. In fact, if you don't do it And I look at your signals on the thing and buy and sell with. Just do it. It's an experiment. It's good. Glenn, what are you scared of? That your system won't hold out?
I'm not into it.
Are you scared your system won't hold out? Just call that education.
I've already explained.
I may learn that your system is better than mine. I may learn that. If that's the case, I'll start trading more. But, you know, we may learn something from this.
I don't think we'll learn anything. I think we'll learn anything. Data point, either I beat you or you beat me, and it'll be meaningless because it's one single data point.
You just said that. You don't want to learn anything.
Over 100 years in order to know which was better.
But to be honest,
both are fine anyway. Why does one have to be better? You know,
I've tried trading. It's a false economy.
God. What can't you live and let live, Justin?
I can't. I cannot do that, Glenn. I can't. I'm not built that way. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
You carry on trading. It's fine. And we'll have that competition. We should pick something like, you know, whatever, Cardano or something. One of those. We both see have longevity. And I'll just hold it. You trade it and see what, you know, you may beat me. I'm game, but there we are. That's the way, you know. You may not beat me. You may make more money. It's not, we're not beating each other here.
Okay.
We could both be winners by making money. But who's made more than the other? That's all I'm saying. You know?
Yeah. I don't know about this.
It's like running a marathon. If you know, lots of people. I've run a marathon in New York. Lots of people beat me, but I still did it.
I feel like you're one of those sales guys on my doorstep, and you've like put your foot in the door, and you won't go away now. I'm like, I'm not interested. Oh, but you're missing out. This would be really. You could learn things. Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want your sponges brushes.
Last question. Who was it? What was the name of that guy in that fund went bust?
What was his name? I still can't remember. It's so famous.
Was he on GameStop? No, what went bust? What did he have it in?
Come on, you know the British guy. It was like a massive thing. Like, I can't believe both of us have got a brain freeze at this moment. It was only a couple of years ago. It was a massive deal. You know, there are still people fighting to try and get their money back and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, Woodford? Woodford, you mean?
Yes, Woodford.
No, I thought you meant the guy... I meant an American guy recently whose fund went through. Was it because of GameStop or something? No, one of those tech guy. He's an American-Asian guy or Asian-American guy, Chinese or Japanese looking.
Oh, yeah, that was to do with GameStop. Yeah, some hedge fund guy, yeah.
Yeah, no, but he was well off, really well off, but really leveraged up massively. And then he went bust. He said, well, what, you idiot. What are you doing well anyway? So, you know, but there we are.
Exactly. So, like, that's the thing. And that was the point I wanted to make, actually, which has been preying on my mind. I kept forgetting to make this point. But it's very important. You'll read a lot of the time about, I'm talking to the listeners here, you'll read a lot of the time about people who have done really well really quickly, right? And I even wrote one of those articles. That article I wrote in the Times a few years ago about how I turned £3,000 into £100,000 during the crash of 2008. The Little Short, I called it. But the point is, when people do things like that, it's generally a one-off. It's not something that they then do every year. And I am much like all the other people that you may have read about. Some of them made millions really quickly trading. What they do is they do that initially because they're young and they haven't got much to lose and they just think, what the hell? That's how I felt anyway. But then once you've got serious money, you start thinking to yourself, oh, I want to hang on to this money. And that's when you start trading more conservatively. You know, I added that £100,000 to the pile that I was already making from my trading, waited another few years, made some more money, and then gave up my job. And I was like, right, I've got this pile of capital now, and I'm going to trade bloody conservatively from now on because I don't want to lose this pile under any circumstances. So I trade in such a way that my risk of a catastrophic loss is extremely low, which obviously wasn't the case when I was turning 3,000 into 100,000. And it's exactly the same. You'll see for all the trading gurus that you see online, all those stories you hear about people making tons of money, it's like they do it as a one-off, maybe a two-off, a three-off at most. And then once they start getting a bit long in the tooth, it's all about preserving your capital. Am I right? Justin?
No. Right, yes, you're right. Yeah, you know, because it is, yes. I mean, it gets to that stage where you start to preserve it. But some people just agreed they have this, need to want to gamble more to become richer and richer. And the thing is, that isn't happiness. Happiness is appreciating what you have.
Well, the problem is, if you to have that attitude, it's like tossing a coin, right? It's like, you know, when I turned 3,000 into 100,000, I had effectively tossed a trading coin. I could have lost that 3,000 pretty easily, but instead I made 100,000 because the coin came up heads. And if you carried on doing things like that over and over again, you might get heads, but you're going to get tails sooner or later. And that's what happens. It only takes one screw up for a big trader to go bust. You can be right and get it right, say, 10, 20 years in a row, but if you keep taking too much risk, sooner or later you will lose the lot. That's how it works.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like, who was the writer? One of the famous writers was had an invite to a hedge funds party, I wrote in this book, and...
Nassim Taleb?
No,
he
wasn't,
talks
no,
about
no,
this kind
no,
of thing
no,
in his
no,
Black Swan. No, that's no, kind wasn't, of the Black Swan theory.
Yeah, no, it wasn't him. No, just saying that this hedge fund guy... Someone introduced him to the hedge fund guy, and he said, oh, by this way, this guy earned more today than you've earned in the last year. And he said something like, yeah, but the difference between me and him is that I have something he hasn't. And he said, oh, what's that? He said something about, I'm happy with what I have. you know? So I don't need to go chasing more and more and more all the time, because that leads to your downfall. And that essentially is unhappiness. Knowing what you have and appreciating it, it's happiness, you know? And but you also
Look at Michael Saylor's face. I mean, if you've seen him in photos and videos?
He looks stressed. He looks at the Bitcoin price. Every day he's with that Bitcoin price, and then he goes on and rants about it for a few more on as many platforms that can have him. Then calm down,
friend. He does. Just look him up. Look up him on Google Images, right? I've actually done this, looking at loads of different photos of him, and it's like he hardly ever smiles, but when he does smile, it looks really forced, like he's literally had to, you know, get some tools to force his lips into the right position for a smile.
I saw someone yesterday post.
The guy is, he obviously has demons, and he's, as a result, he's taking big risks because he's trying to find that elusive happiness, I guess.
Yeah, well, someone, he said something yesterday about it, a couple of days ago, buying more and more, and someone replied with a tweet and a picture of this, basically a homeless guy sitting around with all plastic bags around him on a laptop. he's only found a laptop in one of the bags, you know. And it looked a bit like Michael Saylor. Yeah, that's what he'll be like in about 10 years' time, but he's not careful. Anyway, listen, I've got to go. We've gone on enough about this nonsense now. And we're boring ourselves. Marvellous. Speak you next week.
All right, bye then.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Zumo. Zumo is the UK-based digital wallet which makes your money and cryptocurrency work seamlessly together. Zumo is a simple and safe way to start your crypto journey. Download the app today on iOS or Android and get going in as little as 5 minutes.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Altona Rare Earths at 10.5 pence, non-mover. At four, U Group, again non-mover, 257.5. At three, Hummingbird Resources, down 1.8% to 19.25. At two, Intelligent Ultrasound, non-mover, 16.25. And at one, Vietnam Holding, another non-mover at 2.59. Okay, it's time to check out the most read RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, it is Aston Martin Lagonda, commencement of legal proceedings. At 4, Ridgecrest Holdings. At 3, Dukemont Capital Holdings. At 2, 4D Pharma, conference presentation on LBP manufacturing. And at 1, Novacyt full year 2020 results and update on strategy. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciato.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.